Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jurgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jurgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
We really loved having Dean Smith as a guest. He's witty, articulate, convincing, and his teams play good football. So in part two of the big interview with Dean, we reflect on the influence of his father, cherished father, what he's learned from his own player, Tyrone Mings, in how to combat racism, plus his memories of last season's incredible 7-2 win over Liverpool. However, we begin with a subject central to Dean's coaching philosophy. How to build a culture at a football club and how to nurture it. I promise you're going to enjoy Dean Smith, Villa manager. Is it possible that you can only establish a culture as a squad turns round a little bit? Because you get people who believe, you get people who are just going, yes, boss, no, boss, and you've not changed them. They're not buying in. They're doing it because they kind of have to. But just like, let's say at the Cliff and Carrington and in Old Trafford, there was, from the moment that there was a handover from Pallister and Bruce maybe and Cantona through to the class of 92, they always said that when new people came in from either Britain or the continent, they said, this is our way. This is our way. And it helped. You could see it helped in the all for one, one for all attitude. They played and behaved. Again, it was like Ron Saunders. There was a little bit of playing hard, living hard. But that's how you can make sure that a culture is firmly rooted, because you get your believers and the new ones are just see nothing but. It's when you're starting that it's hard.
Yeah, the starting part is the hard part, you know, because what you can't do is go into a place and judge a culture straight away because you haven't lived it. You know, I've seen too many managers go into a new club and say, oh, they're not fit enough, the culture's not great. That's not, you don't know, you haven't lived it. So until you go in there and live it, then you get an idea of what's there. And, you know, you go into a training ground and straight away you become the leader of that training ground, whether you like it or not. So people will, they'll pull on your behaviour straight away. And the one thing I try to be is consistent. That's my big word. I remember we went through a sticky spell at Brentford. And Brentford is an unbelievable football club, really, really good people who run it. We had a sticky spell of runs. And at the end of the season, we had two sporting directors and they said, right, we need to sit down with you and do your appraisal. And I went, oh, okay, an appraisal. I said, never done an appraisal in football before. So I said, well, who actually does your appraisal? And they went, well, actually, Matthew should probably do it. He was the owner. but Matthew's not going to do it. I said, okay, I'm happy to do an appraisal, but me and you do, me and Rasmus do Phil's, me and Phil do Rasmus's, and Rasmus and Phil do mine. And it was the best learning curve again for me, where I learned so much about them, they learned so much about me. And we just had a three-way chat where, you know, we talked about, and the one thing they said to me was, even when we were losing, when I went into the training ground, win or lose, always the same. It was, you know, go and get your breakfast, thank the chef, how are you, to the cleaners and the kit men. And that's how it should be. When I first walked into that football club, all of a sudden I'd gone from having 6 members of staff to 26 members of staff. And that was Brentford. And obviously when I've gone from Brentford to Villa, all of a sudden there's more again. And I always say to them, listen, do your job. Don't try to justify it. You're here for a reason. You're employed for a reason. If you try to justify it, it means that you want to be seen. Do your job. It's important enough.
But Dean, I mean, again, tell me I'm talking rubbish if I am. I think that the concepts that you're talking about seem wholesome and healthy. They're bound to produce better unity and feeling. But football is absolutely riven with insecurities, patch protection, the idea of sharing information, even in an assessment, that's a weakness. You're preaching evangelically against just about a century of, if not stupidity, then certainly insecurity, I think.
I've always said in the 10 years I've been a manager or a head coach, I've never been worried about getting sacked from my job because I'm not in control of that. I can win 10 games on the spin and still get sacked. I can lose 10 games on the spin and not get sacked. I'm not in control of that. So I don't worry about that. I worry about my job, which is developing players, developing human beings and making a really good team for this football club. And I try not to then worry about anything else. And I don't take it home, which, you know, is an art in itself. I remember when I first got the job at Walsall, and after the game, I went mad at the lads for somebody had made a mistake. And I walked into my office, I had a headache, and I was like, God, I've got to go and do the press now. And I said, from that day, I'm not doing that. I said, A, I can't change the result. B, I need these players again next week. And C, the most important thing is the message I get out now to the fans and the players in the press. So after the match now, they get 2 minutes of my time and that's it. And it's never a rant, because I can go through the game again the next day when we review it more logically and with players who are all a little bit calmer, because it is an emotional game. And sometimes you have to take them emotions out of it where you can. During a game, that's the time when it is very hard. But I'm not a rant and raver on the sidelines. I protect my players. You know, I don't like the opposition bench having a go at them because they're my players. And, you know, probably, and I've calmed myself down a little bit this year, probably have a go at officials too much, you know, because they are human as well and make mistakes. But it's important for me that my players see a consistency, because it allows them to go and be consistent as well. And that's what we're searching for.
All right, a quick cheeky follow-up before my next question from one of our socios, who's one of our members who support the podcast. Dean, when you said never again after that little rant at the players at Brentford, and you said never again for a lot of different reasons. Where, because that volcanic stuff in certain afternoons or nights still exists. Where does it go?
Listen, I won't deny it comes out now and again, and I think it has more of an impact when it does come out now and again. If I'm doing it week in, week out, eventually the players are like, yeah. And I've always said there's two things. If you upset the players or you make them bored, you're in trouble as a coach. You're in trouble. You know, you have to make, for me, you have to make training enjoyable, but also a learning experience. They want to come in. They want to work. They want to feel like they've learned something. So when they leave, they can actually feel fulfilled. And that's what I try to do. And one of the big things I've always said, I wanted to be a manager who I would have wanted to be managed by.
Yeah, brilliant.
And it's a big thing, because I remember I made my debut at 17. I have no idea why the manager picked me, but he picked me and I played and we won 3-0. And, you know, because at that time I didn't understand the game. I don't think I was really coached until I was probably 23, 24. I was told, get the ball, give it Derek Staven. And it was like, yeah, but I can see so many other things. But it was like, but that was the way it was then. The manager and the coaches were authoritarian and you were told what to do. I think my learning as a player came through playing with the likes of Derek Staven, Des Bremner, Gary Shaw, Kevin McDonald.
Top players.
Yeah. And they'd had the best of their careers, but had come down their level to Warsaw. And it was a great learning curve for me, learning from all them players.
Will McLeod is one of our socios, one of our members. Good afternoon. Could you ask for Dean's recollections of a big moment from last season, the 7-2 victory against champions Liverpool? Was anything different about the build-up? What was the match and post-match like from his point of view? Did Dean have any idea before the game that they might be about to do something special?
No idea at all. I'd felt that we was in a good place. Did I expect us to go and beat Liverpool 7-2? No. I can honestly say that. We played them in Project Restart at Anfield and we played a little bit differently because we felt that there was a weakness that we could expose. And we missed our chances in that game, ended up losing the game 2-0. But we just felt that it was the right way to go and play against Liverpool. You know, because they have their identity, the way they play under Jurgen Klopp, and it's fantastic for everybody to see. But my job is to try and expose weaknesses. And, you know, we didn't want to go too far away from that previous game. I mean, we were kind of fortunate last season because we won our first four games. But people forget that our first game should have been against Manchester City away. So it could have all been so different. But because they had played late in Europe, that game got cancelled. So our first game was Sheffield United. Then we played Fulham away. And then it was the Liverpool game. On the day, we scored three deflected goals, you know, which wrong-footed the goalkeeper. But we created so many chances that Ollie Watkins got a perfect hat-trick and was disappointed because he felt he should have scored five. And we didn't have a lot of possession because Liverpool are a possession-based team, but we knew the areas that we wanted to exploit when we actually won the ball back. And to be fair, it's the one game where I look back and go, that's where players expertly dealt with the game plan, how we wanted it to. It helped that we had special talent in Jack Grealish. We had a player, Ross Barkley, who was his first game for us, and he was incredible on that game. And Ollie Watkins, who I believe is the best presser in the Premier League.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers, and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It felt, watching it, I was really impressed. I'd like to say proud, but it's only now knowing you and listening to you that the relentlessness with when they sniffed a chance, when they never took their foot off. There must have been a moment when some players were going, well, is this real? Do we sit on what we've got? Let's stick, not twist. But it was remorseless. It was ambitious. And to me, okay, you were never going to do that week in, week out, but it told me a lot about the people in that squad and either what you'd got through to them or what the culture was, because it was like, listen, if we sniff a chance, punch, punch and punch again. That's what I loved about that afternoon.
There was a big thing about it as well, because of who Liverpool were at the time. Even at 5-1 or 6-2, you never felt comfortable because they could go and score goals. So we had to go and continue to be relentless. And my upbringing has always been, I'm not one who sits on a one-goal lead because I believe if you do, then all you're going to do is bring pressure on. And eventually that pressure is going to tell with some of the quality of the players you're up against. You know, what relieves you more is by scoring a second goal and going 2-0 up. You know, so that's something that I try and pass on to the players to go and do.
I have to close with three, two of which are a little bit sensitive, so I'm going to be careful about it. But our sponsor, C65, say, and it's a simple one, what's your proudest moment as Villa manager?
I'd have to say getting them promoted, simply because it was at Wembley with 40-odd thousand Villa fans there. If there'd have been fans allowed in at West Ham when we stayed up, I'd have probably said that because I thought it was a bigger achievement. But getting promoted in front of all our fans at Wembley. And, you know, if I hadn't been the manager, I'd have been on the terraces there. So, you know, that was brilliant.
Dean, this is one where we don't know each other well. So I'll understand if you don't want to commit. But look, and I'm a Scot. I followed Spain through, I was working with Spain throughout the European Championship. And while I'd rather Scotland won matches, I'm not one of those Scots who's anti-English. And I think it's for the benefit of the game that one of the great nations is now competitive again. There's two World Cup winning sides, I think under 17, under 19. It's really clear that there's a progression at the England international side. But it brings with it thorny moments. Now, I loved what Tyrone Mings said. Two things particularly, that while he looked comfortable and dominant, after the tournament, I think he did a lot for people who put a front on in life and look one way but are another, and said, look, I felt watched. I felt worried that people were saying he's the guy we're not sure should be in the team. And I think it was terrifically brave to admit that. I know it's becoming more common, but in the years that you and I were growing up, that was never said, never. And I also specifically, in my opinion, liked what you said about Priti Patel, about her fairly aggressive behaviour towards taking the knee at the beginning of the tournament, and then saying, well, the racism heaped on the penalty missers was... Is there anything you want to talk about Tyrone's attitudes and words post-tournament that answer those? Because to me, I was really, really thoroughly impressed by him. It's the way I want footballers to think and speak.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it right from the start. You know, when we were growing up, such insecurities wouldn't be talked about, but they were there. They were there for most people. And anybody who would tell me that they deny they had them, I would debate, because we've all had insecurities. I feel there's a freshness now for people to be able to come out and say what Tyrone did. And it'd be wrong of me to say that I'm proud of Tyrone for saying, because that's the person he is. And he would say, well, you know me, Gaffer, that's what I'll say what I think. And that's why he's a great member of this football club, and why one of the reasons why I brought him in, because he's thoughtful, he thinks a lot, and he thinks differently sometimes as well. And, you know, I like that because, you know, it allows us to talk about different things that we probably wouldn't talk about before. You know, and Tyrone won't mind me telling you this discussion we had. I was querying whether I took the knee this season. I wasn't sure whether it had probably lost a little bit of what we set out for it to do. And Tyrone actually said to me, Gaffer, I would prefer you to do it. He said, because, you know, if we've chosen to take the knee and you don't as our leader, what does that look like? I said, well, that would allow me to actually discuss my reasons for not doing it. We had a conversation. I decided, no, I will. I'll continue to take the knee. We feel here at Aston Villa a great responsibility along with Sheffield United, because we were the first clubs who agreed to take the knee. And the reason to do it was to raise awareness to inequality and racism. And I think we've done that now. And we will continue to do it because, as Tyrone said to me, there may be just one child in a playground who goes home and asks his parents why we're doing it. That's important enough then for me. So I understand Tyrone's point when he said that. But I do feel now we need guidance from the authorities on where we go next. You know, we've educated a lot of, not the football world, but how do we go on educating other people and how does it move on? Because we can't kneel for the next 50 years, you know, and we also know there's certain people we're never going to get to. We understand that and we have to accept that. But there's got to be some kind of education that goes on there. What's our next step? And I think the authorities now need to get together and decide what that next step is and give us some guidance.
I'm really grateful for such a clear and articulate answer. And I think that it's, again, I think it relates to creating a culture. I know it's different from creating a culture within a more closed environment like a club and you're the club's leader, but I still think that's the same missionary work. So the two to close on, I mentioned the Super Cup win over Barcelona. You didn't happen to be at Villa Park that night, did you?
Oh, I did. I was there, yes. And my abiding memory of that is Gordon Cowans. The goalkeeper saved the penalty, and Gordon Cowans followed up and scored the rebound, and he got volleyed into the goal. They were vicious that night, Barcelona. I think they had two men sent off.
They had both Julio Alberto, who's had a terrible life of suffering, and Marcos Alonso, both sent off. And Big Alan Evans got a red card too. There was no holding back, but, I mean, any way you look at it, Wednesday, 26th January, a two-legged European final, Gary Shaw, Gordon Cowans, Ken McNaught, and a 3-0 win over a side with Ruti, Alexanko, Migueli, Victor Munoz, legend, Bernd Schuster, Perico Alonso, who's Xabi Alonso's dad, Carrasco, I mean, Kini, one of the great scorers of all time in Spanish football. I mean, okay, the 1-0 by minute game is the one, but that must have been only 31,000 at Villa Park, but it must have just felt like heaven. Paradise.
It was incredible. I'm not sure a lot of us understood what the Super Cup was at the time, you know, hence there only being 31,000 there. But it was incredible. It was such an incredible season because we just won the league. The following season, we won the European Cup. And then we're in the European Cup again and the Super Cup. We win the Super Cup. And then we're playing against Juventus in the quarterfinal of the European Cup again. And, you know, Boniek's playing. And it was incredible times.
What do you then, this is the last one that I meant that's sensitive, because I want to be delicate. It's only very recently that you lost your dad. What do you owe your dad? What did your dad do for you in life? What did he show you? Not just with the way that he brought you up and your brother up, but, you know, just the act of, we sometimes forget how important it is. Take your kids, take your son, take your daughter to football, because he's literally changed and enriched your entire existence on this planet with that simple thing about showing you his love for that club.
Yeah, I mean, he introduced us to football. It was his love. He wasn't a great footballer himself, but he introduced me and my brother to football. And it was hard to get a compliment from my dad. The way he was brought up, he wouldn't have had many compliments from his dad. And, as I say, he worked in a factory. We didn't see an awful lot of him. He was out at 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, back at 5:30, would sit, eat his dinner, have an hour's sleep, and then walk down the pub for a couple of pints. You know, it was a simple life. We learned valuable lessons, me and my brother, from my dad because of that. I would say it was my dad's values within the house, but it was probably my mum who brought the family up because my dad was having to earn the money for us. But when he gave you a compliment, it meant a lot. You know, he would always say that my brother was the better footballer, but unfortunately he found lager. Listen, we owe so much to our parents, and you know, they worked hard to make sure we had a holiday each year, whether it be in Mid Wales, at Pontins or wherever. And I remember the first time we ever went abroad, we went on a 28-hour coach journey to get to Spain. Such was the times then. But we knew how hard they worked for it, and we appreciated it and realised that we had to go and work hard, you know, to be successful in our lives as well.
Dean Smith, West Midlands chess champion, leader, culture maker, admirable Villa manager. This has been pure joy. It's only out of the respect I was taught from my dad that I'm stopping now, because I could do another day of this. Thank you. All of us will be watching Villa with expectancy and hope, and the expectancy that we'll enjoy watching them, because your team plays a brand of football that, you know, win, lose or draw, is enthralling, it's entertaining. I don't think there's anything that you could look back and say to the 81-82 side and say, we don't try to do that. You know, okay, maybe the levels they reached are still to come for you, but there are direct traces between you and that team and your team and that team, and that's the biggest compliment I can hand out. It's been a thrill speaking to you. Thank you for being so generous with your time.
No worries. Thank you. Good to speak to you, mate.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.